Thanks for listening to another episode of JWP Podcast. Be sure to give us a rating and also write us a review, and we will read it on the next episode. Major thank you to our audio engineer, Jomar Cardoza, and all our other contributors that help to make JWP Podcast successful. Be sure to check the show notes for additional resources and references.
So if I'm in my 20s, should I get life insurance, or should I wait and say, you know, I'm much younger, I'm healthy, nothing is really going to happen. You know, I go to the gym 4 times a week. I feel really good every single day. I can't even remember the last time I got sick. I feel pretty good. Should I still get life insurance?
I'm so confused about life insurance. Very recently, we talked to Daphne Jones about life insurance. Key takeaway, Daphne said,
on keeping it simple, keeping it basic, getting insured.
Very recently, I've talked to other people about life insurance. Some say, get the IUL, it's the best one, but it's the most expensive one. So what is the right steps to take? Our guest today, Donald, will help us to decompose, understand, and wrap our heads around the what ifs. Hey, dear listener, introducing the one thing for this episode. Oftentimes, we share so much information on JWP Podcast. We want to give you an opportunity to implement some of the information we shared. So we introduced the one thing.
All right, JWP Podcast, we're back with another episode. And I'm very excited for this episode today. We have a special guest with us. This is someone I've known for a bit of a long time now. Donald is very passionate about financial literacy and also personal finance development. And when I think of this podcast, our goal is to bring our listeners relevant information that can help them to be successful on their financial journey. And so without much ado, Donald, welcome to the platform.
Wow. Thank you so much, Papa. I absolutely appreciate it. It's awesome to be here. Like you said, I'm very passionate when it comes to financial literacy and also personally developing yourself to where you never have to rely on anyone else other than yourself for having a bag again. So, you know, great to be here.
Amazing. So how we know each other is we went to community college together, Union County College. And then from there, we also went to Rutgers University together. So shout outs to Rutgers and shout outs to Union County College. But fast forward after those experiences, you went ahead and joined the military, where I think you definitely picked up some incredible skills. It's probably shaped your perspective of the world in so many different ways today. And so would love to hear about your journey, you know, starting from UCC and going to Rutgers, joining the military. And now you're a big proponent of financial literacy and personal finance development. Tell us about your journey.
So originally from the Midwest, North Dakota, born and raised, it's a very sheltered reality where you don't really, you know, there's always a lot more to the world. I absolutely said, this is not for me. I got to figure out what's going on in this world, in this life. So I didn't want to be a diesel mechanic or a farmer for the rest of my life. So as soon as I saw an opportunity to leave North Dakota, I decided the United States Marine Corps is my way to do that. And I also had a calling to serve and be a Marine. I did what they call Mediterranean U. So we hit parts of Africa, the Middle East, and then also Europe as well. I was a very good Marine. You know, I got promoted to E5, which is Sergeant. With my MOS specifically, I got to the highest rank possible. And I realized, you know, I was doing logistics for a battalion, so about 1,300 Marines. My job was to move all of our equipment, our vehicles, our containers, our assets. I had to move it utilizing the Navy ships, our aircrafts. I had to create load plans and move all of these assets and personnel all over the world. So logistics was my job. got into community college, still was actually undecided, just an associate's in business is what I graduated UCC with. And then when I went to Rutgers, actually, Rutgers, they exposed me to the real estate program. And as soon as I was exposed to the real estate program, got obsessed with real estate. I was working with a Keller Williams agent. Actually, I wasn't even her intern or anything like that. But basically, she was looking for people. She was looking for distressed properties and essentially like, you know, a property that she could buy as a real estate agent, fix it up, put a little work on herself, and then she'd put it on the MLS and flip it for a huge profit. But those people that were willing to go talk to all these people that had distressed properties, she would give us a little money. So I learned immediately that, oh my gosh, just by talking with someone and telling them that I know somebody that knows somebody, I can get paid for it. So I was learning that about real estate while I was going through and actually learning about, you know, the laws of real estate, all the different aspects. And I became the vice president at Rutgers, actually, of the Real Estate Society.
There's something that you said that I kind of want to go back to, right? Because when I think of my listeners, some of them are very young adults just getting started on the financial journey. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of us are a little undecided on what kind of steps we want to take with our lives, especially do we go to college? Do we go to the Marines? Do we find a job or do we go to a vocational school and learn a skill and, you know, carry on with our lives? And so based on your experience, what would you tell someone that's in this situation right now, trying to figure out what is my next best step?
Well, the first thing I would say is analysis paralysis is not your friend. So my recommendation is whatever thing that you can take action on right now, that's the decision to make. If you can take action on it, take action on it.
Yeah. And it seems like that's sort of what you've done. And now you're in real estate. And so one thing that I really love, Don, I've known you for a while. And so I think you're a great friend, very knowledgeable, insightful. And I think one thing I really admire about you is you're always willing to share what you've learned. And so speaking of this life insurance industry, this is a financial instrument that you and I know that we all need it, right? And if you have it, I think it saves you a peace of mind, you know, and it's one less thing to worry about whether something comes up unexpected and it's able to help you. But the issue here is a lot of us do not understand life insurance, right? And so there's statistics out there that shows only 45% of millennials have life insurance policy, which is outstanding, which means there's another chunk that does not have life insurance. And so I recently had an episode with Daphne Jones, who is also very knowledgeable about life insurance. I think she enlightened us a lot. I think you can also shine more light on this conversation, mostly because I think you're much younger. Also, you fit the criteria of my listeners. And so I think you would be able to resonate more with us today. And so based on what you've learned so far, being that you're still learning in the industry, what could you tell some of us that are still trying to understand what is life insurance?
For the longest time, life insurance was just talking about death and planning about when you die. So I think for the younger generation, sometimes it's harder for them to see the value of something because we're all running around like live fast, die hard. No matter what I do, I'm invincible. We haven't maybe had enough life experience yet to understand the necessity for life insurance, you know, but maybe some that have failed very fast, very hard, understand maybe I need to protect and worry about, you know, my health and also my money more. So yeah, that's been my biggest thing. It's just maybe not enough life experience and there's confusion of understanding the necessity of it.
Yeah. So if I'm in my 20s, should I get life insurance or should I wait and say, you know, I'm much younger, I'm healthy, nothing is really going to happen. You know, I go to the gym 4 times a week. I feel really good every single day. I can't even remember the last time I got sick. I feel pretty good. Should I still get life insurance?
So you're actually in the best position of your life right now to get life insurance. Ideally, it is insurance. And when the insurance company looks at you, they're looking at you as a risk. If in the event we have to pay out this claim and compensate this individual with whether it's a living benefit rider, so they got access to the death benefit, you know, during their actual lifetime, or whether they died prematurely because of a health condition that they didn't see, they are evaluating you as a risk. So the best time to get covered and get insurance is actually at the youngest age possible. There's actually a lot of people where they will have a baby and then they immediately put a life insurance policy on the baby. So you are never too young to be covered and have life insurance. And I would say the younger and healthier, the better, because the rates are going to be a lot more affordable for you when you're younger and healthy. So, I mean, young, healthy individuals get covered while it's still cheap.
Yeah. That's the big talk right there. Get covered while it's still cheap.
Like, to that's the 55% of millennials that aren't covered, I'm really asking you, like, what life-changing event or near-death experience are you waiting for and that you're not prepared for right now without having coverage and protection? What event is it that you're waiting for until you make the decision to, like, worry about yourself a little bit, you know? And then by worrying about yourself, worrying about your friends and family too.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say worry about your friends and family. And it's a very great question that you ask, that what life event are you waiting for before you actually make that decision? Because when I had Daphne Jones on the podcast, one of the things that we discovered is we know that the average American cannot come up with $400 in the case of an emergency. But also the average funeral cost was over $3,000, right? Hmm. And so if the average American cannot come up with $400 and the average funeral cost is about $3,000, and the average life insurance could cost you as low as 25 to 30 bucks, right? And so why are we not getting that protection? And one of the things that I discovered while I was getting ready for our episode, Don, is education, which is the lack of one of the reasons why most young adults are not getting life insurance. And so from your experience, what is the best approach to education when it comes to life insurance?
So for me, it's like something I'm obsessed with and studying. I know for everyone else, it might not be as attractive as an industry to study and really understand. And I researched everything online. I tried to find everything that was completely wrong and messed up about life insurance, which I did, because like there's so many. If the moment you go online and you search life insurance, which is what I'm assuming a lot of millennials do, and then they search about life insurance and then they're immediately thrown off about life insurance because, like, you know, if you go online, they're going to tell you all this stuff about how life insurance is a scam. It's a pyramid scheme. The companies don't pay out. And, you know, it's a fully regulated industry. Like, I'll be completely upfront and transparent with you. I had to take state exams. Every state I get licensed in, I actually get like a little certificate that I have right behind me. I was going to show you, but yeah. So, I mean, it's like, it's a regulated industry with state exams and, like, you know, there's compliance and you have to pay every year to run on specific platforms, and it's completely regulated. But when I was seeking out insurance knowledge, the main thing was what I kind of was explaining early in the podcast, where everyone just views life insurance as like, let's talk about when we die, who's getting left what. They think it's kind of just like setting up your wills and your trust, and let's talk about all these things that's going to benefit everyone that when I'm not here. And like, a lot of people actually get a little impressed and internal. So what really helps with the younger generations is exposing them to the other products life insurance actually has. You know, like there's specific products such as Index Universal Life Insurance, where the main purpose of it is meant to grow and protect your money, you know, away from market loss. I think just more exposure to the different types of products that insurance actually, like life and health insurance actually can offer someone, is how you can educate yourself as a younger individual.
Yeah, no, that's true. And just to go back a little bit to your statement about the life insurance industry being a highly regulated industry. So one of the most recent news that I was just reading about before our episode is Australian Securities and Investments Commission's penalized MLC life insurance $10 million for misleading customers and failing to provide benefits. This is just an example of a story where a company tried to mislead customers or tried to be maybe fraudulent. And as we can see, they're penalized $10 million for misleading customers and failing to pay out benefits. I think it's mainly the education piece. And so like, as you were just speaking right now, you mentioned the index life insurance, and I'm just like, oh my God, like, what is that? Right. So if someone is listening and has no idea what that is, but you did also mention it's a great way to grow your wealth. This is a podcast where we're focused on providing relevant information so we can actually grow our wealth. And so could you break those two things down real quickly to help us understand what is that index life insurance? And also, how does it help us to grow our wealth?
The index universal life insurance is actually the original life insurance you have, or more like the whole life and term insurance, which is the classic, I have to die for any benefit to really happen to me. But the thing that makes the index universal life insurance very interesting is, okay, so essentially you buy the policy and you get covered for your health insurance needs. And then a portion of that, of the policy goes to the insurance, but then you can set aside however much money you choose to invest in the policy based off the death penalty. So the higher the death benefit, the more money you can put into the policy. But essentially, a small portion of what you're investing on a yearly, you know, semi-annual, you can choose however you want to set it up, is going into a life insurance policy that is operating as an index account. So if we're going back to stock markets and we're thinking of the different ways that markets can move, you have the fixed type of investment where it's just a straight, steady line. Your money's safe, but it never really grows. You have the variable, which is a lot of, like, you know, 401ks and those. There's a variable market to them where sometimes they're really, really up and you're making a lot of money. And then other times they get cut and they're down. So your money's going up and down, growing, but maybe not necessarily always in a favorable way, and it's scaring you. So that's a variable. And then you have what they call the new kid on the block, you know, the Lamborghini, the Ferrari, where we've been looking at everyone having this crazy stress and anxiety of the markets and seeing their money not grow or grow in a way that they can't control. And the insurance companies said, index, let's index it. So essentially what they did is they created an index account. So it plays off the returns of the market, but when the market decides to come back down, it indexes and it locks in your return. And then instead of going down, you just stay here flatlining. And then when the market goes up, you go up, but you never go down and have a massive loss like you would in a traditional variable, you know, market. And just with that indexing strategy of never actually having market loss, when you're indexing the money, you know, and you're growing it anywhere from 6 to 12% in these accounts, you accumulate wealth very, very quickly. And essentially at that point, you've created a little financial bunker inside of an insurance policy that you can pull and invest from how you please.
Index life insurance, also known as indexed universal life insurance, IUL, is a type of permanent life insurance that combines a death benefit with a cash value component. In index life insurance, the cash value portion of the policy is linked to the performance of a specific financial index, such as the S&P 500 or the NASDAQ 100. Okay, let's keep that definition more simple and relevant. It's summertime and you decide to have a birthday party. As a host for the party, you want to keep track of how much the guests are enjoying themselves. Instead of individually asking each guest, you decide to create an happiness index to represent the overall mood and satisfaction level at your party. You decide to assign a rating scale from 1 to 10 for each guest's happiness level, where 1 represents very unhappy, 10 represents extremely happy. So throughout the evening, as guests mingle, dance, and enjoy the food, you periodically take a snapshot of their happiness ratings and calculate the updated happiness index. This index gives you a general idea of how well the party is going and whether guests are having a good time. So, similarly, in the financial world, an index represents a measurement or benchmark of the performance of a specific segment of the market or the overall market. It provides investors with a way to track the general direction and performance of investments, just like the happiness index tracks the overall mood at your party. Keep listening to discover the one thing for this episode.
I think with every investment, there's a risk. If I invested into the S&P 500 index, for instance, even though it's an index, there's still a risk because of volatility, right? It could go up, it could come down. I could lose all my money. I could make a lot of money. But what you're saying is with the index life, it doesn't go down. That's really interesting. I never knew that. What about, because I think another reason why some young adults don't have life insurance is because of that opportunity cost. If I invest in life insurance, then I'm also saying maybe I'm not able to invest into the stock market. And so wouldn't this index life just solve that opportunity cost issue then? If it never goes down, then why don't we all buy index life? What's the risk in the index life?
I mean, I really can't. It's driving me crazy because I can't find what makes this a risky investment. The only thing that I could see that would make this not a good investment for someone would be, so whoever you're working with to get this policy, right? If you don't have clear, transparent communication, if you don't completely explain your specific purpose of, hey, I want this money because I want to invest in real estate and have a large amount of cash that I can pull from to buy properties, like, then as your agent, that person will structure it to be a cash flowing policy. But if you're getting the IUL and your focus is, hey, I want a huge death benefit and, you know, some money just in case something happens, but primarily I want this huge death benefit so my legacy for my children, when I die, they have a lot of money. You know, if you don't know those specific things, then it'll be a bad investment for you because you never took the time to sit down and speak exactly what you wanted with the person putting the policy in for you.
That goes back to this company that got fined $10 million for misleading customers and failing to provide the benefits, right?
It's a lack of transparency and communication. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, wow. Well, thanks for sharing that.
Of course.
I'm in the market for life insurance, and hearing about this index universal life insurance doesn't go down. But then again, from listening in my previous episode to Daphne Jones, I was set on getting a term life insurance because it seems like that's where she was pointing towards. I did some research on it and I thought that was the right product to pick in this scenario. But from listening to you now, I'm starting to get second ideas and I need to research it a little further. So thanks for sharing that. If anyone is listening, of course, this is not financial advice. I took something from Daphne and now I'm taking something different from Donald and I'm going to blend the two together and come out with the best information possible. And I think that's what you should be doing as well. So still on this topic of life insurance, there's also the risk of being defrauded for your life insurance. And what do I mean by that? So here's a story. A woman named Corey Richens, this woman is being accused of taking 4 life insurance policies on her husband her husband died from poisoning, specifically fentanyl poison, which he was administered 4 times the lethal dose of fentanyl. This man died. This lady, Corey Richens, was entitled to $2 million in life insurance. $2 million in life insurance. Multiple times, her husband, because I think their marriage was a little strained, and so her husband made a couple of changes to his will. The lady went back, changed the policies. The husband found out and changed them again. Since the husband died, though, she's tried to cash out on these policies. Donald, you're in this industry. I know you're still learning a lot in the industry. When you hear this story, what comes into your mind?
Yeah, I mean, that's like unfortunate that people are corrupt regardless of where they're put in life. Like it really sucks that they found a way to exploit the insurance industry and maybe, you know, potentially get some money in a bad, you know, corrupt way. It just breaks my heart. You know, I'm really happy that we're regulated to the point where we're going to have people from the insurance commission investigating it and finding out, like you said, the details of when you explain that story, you can kind of just paint the picture in your own head of this lady's clearly committing insurance fraud. So, I mean, it's great that like any other insurance, whether it's for your car or your vehicle, you know, there's a whole investigation and fraud department that looks into cases like that. So, yeah, it just breaks my heart that people want to abuse systems sometimes, but at the same time, I'm happy that the fraud regulations are put in place to detect things and catch things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And so if you're listening to this episode, just definitely, I know it's a lot of good-hearted people that listen to our podcast, but this is something to also be wary of, right? There's life insurance fraud. And in general, there's just insurance fraud. And you want to be careful that you don't fall prey to any of these things. And you also want to be careful that you don't get yourself in trouble. So one thing that I wanted to ask you, Donald, is you're quite new in this industry. You're learning a lot. You're on a learning journey, which is amazing because so are we. We're also on this learning journey and we're trying to explore this industry and how we can use it to protect our wealth. Could you share with us any learnings you've come across, any insight that you've picked up that's been really surprising for you on this journey?
Yeah. So, I mean, when I got into the industry and I decided that I'm actually going to get my license and I'm going to, you know, become like an actual license agent that can produce and, you know, issue insurance, there's a whole bunch of knowledge you're given outside of the actual state exam and like the questions, because I mean, if you've went to school and you've gotten a degree for like a bachelor's, any law course you've ever taken, you know, it's really similar to like the final law exams where it's law questions for this insurance exam. But then the way you actually really learn about insurance is all the other knowledge that you're given and exposed to. I have actually a couple of books right here, Money, Wealth, Life Insurance, and then The Retirement Miracle. And then the other one that I wanted to mention is up in my room called The Laser Fund. The thing that's just blown my mind and captivated me the most about insurance as I learn about it is just the secrecy and the way that it's been hidden from the general public due to its ability to decentralize the powers in place of our country. I did not really realize that that was a real thing, but essentially life insurance and health insurance in this industry has been kind of kept secret because if it becomes too powerful, banks no longer are the places where all the money is held. And that's just been really something I thought like that's myth, that's folklore. But no, there is like actual evidence of insurance and things being suppressed so no one can hear about it.
That's interesting. Tell us a little bit more about that.
The way through our standard education system, how we grow up, how we are kind of put through this process of going and being groomed to work in corporate America and graduate with like a W-2. People that are going and going straight into the workforce to join W-2s never have a reason to be exposed to life insurance. because their retirement, everything is handled through the W-2 plan. It's a matrix. It's like a little box. It's a specific, like I said, the reason I left North Dakota to begin with was because I didn't believe that this was the only way life could be lived. And as soon as you kind of step out into the insurance world, you realize that, wait, I can have passive streams of income. I can have money. I can have things coming in, not from my 9-to-5 job. So for me, insurance has been equal to freedom of time, location, and I really will never give that up for anything.
It's quite interesting because I was also reading something from Life Insurance Marketing Research Association, LIMRA, and they were saying that at least 34 million adults say they need more life insurance. So maybe the masses are starting to discover that life insurance has been hidden from us and we're starting to uncover some of the benefits of it. And now we're realizing that we need more life insurance. But speaking of this statistic, though, if I already have insurance, Donald, could I get more life insurance? Is that necessary? Why should I get more life insurance?
Right. So, I mean, typically, like when I'm sitting down with a client and I'm running their financial needs analysis is what we call it. Let's say it's 2023 and I'm covering Papa and I'm hooking him up with his IUL that he did more research on and decided that was the way to go, right? So we cover Papa right now with his current assets. Like, let's say he has a car and he has a townhome, right? Let's fast forward 10 years from now. And okay, what's up, Papa? Checking in with you. How are you doing? Good, man, except now I got 5 cars, 3 houses, and I'm on my second wife. Really? Okay, now there's a need for way more insurance because you have more assets and more things to cover and protect. So a lot of people, they get an insurance policy, they get just the minimum coverage because they're scared, they're worried, they think it's a scam. And then, you know, 10 years down the road, when they realize like, oh my gosh, I've needed more insurance this whole time. I've grown in these aspects of life and there's no way to protect those assets or anything like that. That's when they make the decision, I need more insurance.
Consider the story of Robert Johnson, a successful entrepreneur who owned a small business. Unfortunately, he lost his battle with cancer. However, he had the foresight to purchase a life insurance policy that named his business partner as beneficiary. The death benefit from the policy provided the necessary funds to buy out Robert's share of the business, ensuring the continuity and financial stability for both his partner and his family.
Thanks for sharing that. That's very helpful.
Of course.
Okay, so another thing that I kind of wanted to talk about, this is also another statistic. Most millennials between age 24 and 41 years of age find life insurance policies unaffordable. You're in the industry, you're helping people every single day with life insurance. When you're doing this initial meeting with your clients, which is when you're doing your client needs analysis, right? I'm sure you're discovering this person spends so much on one thing and spends less on another thing. And so when we're seeing the statistic that most millennials think life insurance is unaffordable, you're already in the industry. What do you think?
Yeah. So like I said, during that financial needs analysis with the client at the beginning of the process, a lot is revealed. You know, I literally have like a spreadsheet where it's like, list to me your monthly expenses. So the person has to write down that they have Netflix, they have Hulu, they have 5 different other types of streaming services, all charging them like $5 to $8 a month. And they go through that process. And a lot of times when the people actually go through that process, me as an agent, I don't even have to say anything to them because they start canceling subscriptions. They just wrote it down and actually see some of the things that maybe I'm spending money unnecessarily. And they just start canceling subscriptions. I don't even have to say anything. But, you know, I would challenge people to actually go through if they think like, okay, so a standard term insurance can be literally purchased for a few dollars a day. So like if you were to replace your cup of coffee, if you like designer coffee, or if you were to decide, I don't need Hulu, Netflix, and HBO, and just have Netflix and Hulu, you'd be essentially able to cover and protect yourself for anywhere in the range of $250,000 to $500,000. So, I mean, it's like, it's a no-brainer if you're really thinking about it in the long run. Is my cup of coffee that I'm getting every month worth my health and my life in the event something happened to me? How is my family going to be able, like, if I have a wife and she's going to school right now, how is she going to be able to keep paying the bills if I disappear and I'm not making money tomorrow? Like, how is her life going to be affected? How selfish of me is that to have three streaming apps instead of just making the sacrifice and only having two? So it's just like, you really got to put it into perspective if you think it's unaffordable, because it's truly not.
Yeah, that's interesting. Donald, thank you so much. I feel like I've asked you a lot of questions and you've provided so much insight. Finally, though, one last question. And this is a question that I like to ask every single guest that comes on a podcast. What is your definition of wealth?
So it's funny that you'd say that, because for the longest time, my definition of wealth was just, you know, like being the guy covered in designer everything. I could buy and purchase or go wherever I wanted, whenever I wanted. But now, as I'm in the insurance industry and learning more about the nuances of life, my wealth has transferred more to like, what impact am I going to leave and how is my legacy going to be seen? So my vision of wealth is having like a park or something named after me. You know, I want my name, my philosophies, and my mindsets to be remembered long after I'm gone, essentially. Wealth is no longer like money or material objects. It's taking the mindsets, the ideas, and the things that I've found to help me on this journey in life, eternalizing them, and then having them here on this world for other people to find and hopefully get, you know, benefit from.
Yeah. Legacy.
Legacy. Yeah.
I like it.
Legacy. Leaving a legacy is my definition of wealth. And I'm going to do it very well.
That's a special definition. Thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate that. So if any of my listeners are listening and maybe something you've said has resonated with them and they want to continue this conversation with you, where can they find you?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Instagram, I'm on TikTok. I don't have all the handles for my stuff right now, but LinkedIn for insurance specifically, if you want to learn about bodybuilding, TikTok, and then, you know, social media is social media. So let's just actually hop on the phone and get on a Zoom if you want to know me.
One thing that I'll also do is I'll provide all your information in the show notes, so it would be easy for them to find you and reach out. But Don, thank you so much. Is there anything that you wanted to talk about today that I haven't asked you yet?
No, man, I think you pretty much covered it. I guess just do your research faster so we can get you covered, man.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Sounds good. All right, Donald. This has been a pleasure.
Absolutely, Papa.
All right. Thanks for being on.
Introducing the one thing for this episode. Have you thought about what is your end of life expenses? What is your end of life expenses? Yes, it sounds morbid, but it's something we need to think about. We do not want to leave our loved ones and our family members in a tight predicament in an incident where something happens. So ponder on this. What is your end of life's expenses? Drop a comment in the reviews how you intend to approach this.